Hi, this is Jeremy Bullock, and you're listening to the Forcecast. The name's Fett. Boba Fett.
Oh, even when it's something normal, I hate going up to Jack's office. I always feel like I'm entering the Death Star. I expect to see stormtroopers. I'm telling you, if Donaghy does this at me, I will run.
You'll be fine, Captain Nita.
No, Captain Nita dies. He dies!
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present The Forcecast. And now your hosts, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome once again to The Forcecast, your official podcast for TheForce.net and RebelScum.com, and we are your weekly dose of everything and all things Star Wars. My name is Jason, with me my good buddy Pete.
Howdy, howdy.
And we are back for another week's review of all the news that's fit to talk about in the Star Wars universe. We are brought to you by, for this week's show, December 8th, 2006, our good friends at Official Picks. That's officialpicks.com. Make sure you check them out for all of your Star Wars photograph and autograph needs. You don't need to worry about any authenticity issues with Official Picks. That's picks.com. Well, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm thinking about checking out Official Picks for some officially licensed Star Wars Christmas items that
Oh, really?
I need to send around for some people.
Really?
Yes.
Like who?
If I told you, then they wouldn't realize that Santa wasn't coming from Lucasfilm anymore.
Wow. Well, that's a nice inadvertent plug. I'm sure they'll appreciate that. And they'll be looking forward to that order. You better make good on it.
Well,
because, you know, they do listen.
Yeah. Well, the unfortunate thing is I'm actually buying it for me.
Oh, okay.
But it will be wrapped and it'll have a label that says from Santa.
Well, I find that I do some of my best shopping for myself around Christmas time. I can't help it. Everything's on sale. Yes. Everything's a good deal. I can't pass it up. Anyway, well, one thing that I saw that was particularly interesting was this little blurb about the new James Bond movie, Casino Royale. And with that blurb came the staggering numbers that after 21 Bond films and 40 plus years, the James Bond franchise has grossed $4 billion. I guess 4 million wouldn't be all that exciting,
no,
would it?
That's not that impressive.
$4,792,099. Well, that puts the Bond series at number two behind, you guessed it, the Star Wars franchise of films, which is ahead by, oh, I don't know, looks like maybe a couple mil. Anyway, $4.3 billion.
We scoff at your piddly little attempt at 21 films to take what it took us to do in six.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, 40 years, 21 films to do what George has done in six. So pretty impressive. Still, you know, wouldn't mind having the haul that Casino Royale brought in, you know, one weekend, for gosh sakes. But at any rate, it's, you know, how long can Star Wars continue to hold these records? You know, if he's not making any more movies. Do you hear us, George? We can't be beat out by the likes of the Harry Potters and the James Bonds of the world.
We need to stay on top.
It's all we have,
Give
George.
Us what we need.
Anyway, this is a follow-up, I think, from a previous show where we were talking about if you were interested in taking part in being in a Star Wars documentary. For those of you in Florida, the documentary The Force Among Us is looking for fans who would like to be interviewed for possible feature in a positive documentary about Star Wars fans. This is the one that's written, produced, and directed by Chris and Courtney Macht. And the filmmakers are going to Florida to meet Star Wars fans. So if you're 18 and older, or if you can be accompanied by a parent, they want you to email Chris at MandalorianMarketing@sbcglobal.net. Now, Mandalorian is all spelled out, marketing is MKTING at sbcglobal.net. So you can get all the details. They will be at Cape Coral, Florida, on December 16th and 17th. So make sure that you check that out if you're a Star Wars fan in the Florida area. And I'm sure we'll get some follow-ups on that when that documentary is done. What do you think about origami?
I think it's awesome, but it's very difficult. I have uncrafty hands.
I'm going to vouch for that, folks. He does have uncrafty hands, but and everyone's going to have uncrafty hands. When you look at this, we're going to have a link to this, obviously, in our show notes, but I can't remember where I saw this. I don't know if this was on the Force.net or Rebel Scum, but at any rate, there's some photos on over at Flickr. There's a Flickr series of photos from this fellow, Philip West, who has created these origami figures of a dark Jedi and a light Jedi. I guess they're pretty generic looking. I mean, you could, I guess, call the dark Jedi Darth Sidious and maybe the light Jedi Qui-Gon. But they're very, very cool. And it's not origami as I've, you know, come to think of it, like with the flat folds and you make the little frog and you flip him and he jumps, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, this is almost like sculpting with paper. It's different. It's very cool.
This is advanced origami. This isn't what they teach you on craft day in art class when you're 10.
Right. No.
And when your frog doesn't jump, you get a minus for that day. Not that I harbor any ill will for that having ever happened, but...
Well, and these are very cool, so make sure you check them out. They're worth looking at. Kind of gives me a new outlook on the art of origami. It's very cool. The Dark Jedi is just basically a robe with some hands kind of coming out of it, and then there's Force Lightning. It's just, I was really amazed. So anyway, also, we wanted to bring your attention to a couple of contests that may have slipped off your radar. One was never on my radar, I'm embarrassed to say, but over at rebelscum.com, their good friends at R2-D2 Toys, they've donated something that's near and dear to our hearts, the Saga Collection Imperial Shuttle, for a Christmas giveaway. So here's what they're doing, all right? To be entered into the drawing for this, you need to go to R2D2Toys.com and come up with an order that totals 66 pounds. I guess this is a UK site, I believe. So yes. I think it's 66 pounds. An order adds up to 66. Do you get the connection there?
Would that be order 66?
It just might be. So you don't have to actually buy it. You just have to come up with the order. But here's the catch is you have to build a shopping cart or a list of items for 66 pounds or euros or whatever it is. And you have to have the maximum number of items. That's the person who's going to win. So, which can be kind of difficult when you have as many things as they do. So, anyway, check that out. Again, we'll have a link. And the contest is open until December 24th. So, if you're looking for a free Imperial Shuttle, then make sure you check that out. Also, we wanted to remind you about Rebel Scum's 10th anniversary celebration. We talked about this last week, but make sure that you are... entering that contest as well. I mean, how else are you going to get a custom 12-inch figure with a gentle giant scan of your own head?
I can't think of any way.
And you'll also get some autographs from Barry Holland, who played Lieutenant Renz in Return of the Jedi and uttered the immortal words, "You rebel scum." And not only that, but you're going to get a phone call from this fella. What do you think of that? And he'll answer any questions you have. And if you could record the interview and send it to the podcast at theforce.net, we could play it and have a cantina segment for you.
That's right.
But anyway, we're excited to help rebelscum.com celebrate their 10th anniversary. And speaking of celebrations... That's right. It's that time of the week where we count down the road to celebration. And we give you a free tip. Come on, a free tip on how to survive all the madness of a big convention like Celebration. Pete, what do you got for us?
Well, we're at 24 weeks and counting. Again, it doesn't seem like it's that close, but it's going to sneak up on you, so get out there, get your things going now.
24 weeks. This is less than half a year away.
Yes.
It's going to go fast.
Memorial Day weekend. I can't wait. Our tip for this week, going along the lines of having a water bottle or Gatorade, which is a sports drink for anybody who doesn't know what that is. We had some UK listeners who said, what is Gatorade? It's a sports drink. You know, they're flavored and they replace your B vitamins, all that kind of stuff. But along with those things, make sure that you have some little snacks, granola bars, trail mix, something that you can stick in your backpack, some Pop-Tarts like Jason enjoyed last time we were there.
Oh, my Pop-Tarts.
Smashed at the end of the day, but still good nonetheless. And make sure you have those, because you are going to be waiting in line and you don't want to have to jump out to get lunch or what have you. So bring along some food and you'll enjoy the day even more.
Absolutely. 24 weeks. It's a celebration.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
Well, following sculpting a galaxy and dressing a galaxy, not to be outdone, the one, the only, Ralph McQuarrie has his own book coming out. It'll debut at around the time of Celebration 4. The book called, appropriately enough, The Art of Ralph McQuarrie is an oversized 400-page career-spanning retrospective of the most influential conceptual artist of the past 30 years. This long-awaited volume finally offers readers a glimpse at Ralph McQuarrie's previously unseen artwork, including his early technical illustrations, science fiction book cover and interior art, movie posters, commercial work, film and television work, personal pieces, and the largest single-volume collection of his original artwork for the Star Wars trilogy, making up one-third of the book's content, also featuring a brand-new foreword by George Lucas. And some notes in there by Doug Chang, and appreciations from visual effects supervisor Ken Ralston and actor Anthony Daniels. So make sure that you check out all the links that we'll have on our show notes for more information on this. I know that Ralph is probably, I mean, next to George Lucas, let's face it, the most influential in terms of the vision of Star Wars. And there's something about his artwork. I'm not an art aficionado, but there's something so clean about it. It's kind of hard. That's the only word I can come up with.
I'm pretty sure that most people that are out there that are Star Wars fans have some sort of vision of McQuarrie's art in their head as being part of the Star Wars universe. I mean, even though the concepts evolved into the characters that we saw in the movies, I think we all remember the hulking Darth Vader over top of Luke, probably would have been Starkiller at that point, or
right, yeah,
or you know, the stormtrooper with the lightsaber, or any of those art pieces that basically drove the concept of Star Wars onto the big screen.
No doubt about it. And the one that comes to my mind, I just remember, you know, being 5 or 6 years old when Jedi was coming out, and we had, my brother and I had the magazine, the Making Of magazine, and there was a ton of McQuarrie art in there. And one was a concept photo of, or of illustration of the Rancor. Mm. And then they had all the different, you know, the evolution of that character. And that was really interesting, too. So this is definitely one of those books that I'm going to put on my list of I would love to have. They're going to be pretty expensive now, limited to 2,000 copies. Okay, we're talking about $125 for the unsigned slipcased cover, and then there's one that's going to be signed by Ralph himself, Doug Chang, and Ken Ralston for $300, and then there's one that's going to be signed by everybody, with the exception of George, I believe, and that price is to be determined. So this is coming out from Dreams and Vision Press. We want to thank them for the press release that they sent to our show. It was very cool. It was our first press release. We did not get this from TFN or Scum. This came directly to our podcast at the Force.net mailbox.
Well, the Golden Globes are finally following the footsteps of the Oscars, albeit 5 years later, and adding an animated film category to their award show. This is a derivation from their former awards, where they just included animated films in with all the other comedy and... Is it comedy and...
Well, they have a musical comedy.
Musical comedy, that's right. What it is. It was it was lumped in with all that. So now they finally have a category in which animated films can be recognized on their own. And it was nice that Rob Coleman, who's the animation director for Lucasfilm, chimed in and stated that it immediately brings more attention to animated films, and any filmmaker likes to have more exposure and more recognition and the respect of your peers. So obviously that's a big thing. Now, you and I had kind of thrown about the idea of what constitutes an animated film.
Yeah, you know, there's got to be some bylaws or some definitions or something in the category and what defines an animated film. Because we'd mentioned, well, what about Star Wars? What about the prequels, particularly Episode 3, when so much of it was animated?
Well, and I found the answer to that.
Oh, you did?
The eligible films must be 70 minutes or longer, with no more than 25% live action. And the category is limited to 3 nominations per year. So, essentially, that means that Sith is ineligible.
You think?
Yeah, I would think. I'm not sure what they...
Are they counting backgrounds and...
I would say that I'm not... I wouldn't think...
If you
that
asked
they would
Ewan McGregor, I think he would say it was about 10% live action.
Well, you know, I think that what they're going for is making sure that there's not... a lot of live actors that the animation is doing the acting for the film.
Right.
And although there were characters that did that, the actors that really brought the film to life were, of course, live actors. So I'm pretty sure that eliminates Sith from any recognition. But it kind of falls by the wayside anyway, because it's just now being added, so it's not like they're going to retrospectively nominate Revenge of the Sith because they loved it so much, I'm sure. all those film gurus out in California loved it.
Well, you know, it's not made for the critics. And name one good movie that a critic has ever made.
Right.
You know, so much for critics. But, yeah, if anybody out there is listening at Lucasfilm, and we know that there are some, we'd love to know if any or all of the prequels would have been able to have consideration under this particular category now that they've added officially its own thing. I have to say, though, and they did this with the Oscars how many years ago now?
Five.
5 years ago. Okay. Have you noticed that it's like every animated film gets a nomination, almost, or at least all of the ones that get enough... marketing behind them.
The commercial ones, the ones you're
aware of. Now, there have been some cases where some foreign films have made it and won, I believe. But for the most part, you know, it's going to be your Pixars and it's going to be your Disneys. And, you know, I mean, for a long time, the song category was like that. You know, 3 out of the 5 songs were all Disney songs. It was Tim Rice and Elton John every time. But, we're still glad to see it. Obviously, animated films are... You know, it's the wave of the future, and it's going to be interesting to see that gap close. What's going to happen, though, when so many films cross that line? And if you're lucky enough to land on the mailing list of a Lucasfilm employee this holiday season, you will soon be receiving the latest in a long line of unique holiday cards sent to friends and business partners. This year, the stunning amber mosaic dome above Skywalker Ranch's main house library provides the perfect warm greeting for the card's cover. I look forward to this every year, actually. The official site has been having some nice photos of these cards that come out every year. For a while now. And I guess since it was a non-Star Wars movie year, they didn't put Star Wars characters, but I really like the ones in the past that they have. I used Star Wars characters. This one's okay. I mean, it's pretty. It looks like kind of looks like an ornament that I've got on my tree, actually. I'll show that to you later.
Okay.
But anyway, we are not on the mailing list.
We have always observed from afar.
So, if you're listening... And you work at Lucasfilm? Come on, throw us a bone here. Well, of course we don't have we got to get a P.O. box. That's why we didn't get the card.
I'm sure that is the reason.
We don't have a P.O. box. We got to get a P.O. box.
Yeah,
I'm not going to give out my home address. Star Wars fans are crazy.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
All right, we're here in the cantina with our own, my friend, our co-host here at the Forcecast, Pete. Welcome.
Why, thank you. It's interesting to be on this side of things.
I'll bet it is. All right, well, let's just cut to the chase. We all know that you're the co-host of, the best Star Wars podcast out there.
If we do say so ourselves.
I'm saying so. I can, because you're the guest now.
That's
so
right.
You can be kind of distanced,
Yeah, I love your show.
Especially the co-host, right?
I listen to it every week.
All right, so tell me where it started for you. When did you first become a Star Wars fan?
It's pretty much as long as I can remember. I think a lot of people who send in things say, yeah, I was right about 3, 5 when this came out, and I was about, 1 when A New Hope came out. So it's pretty much as long as I can remember. One of the most vivid memories I have, though, that's kind of always stuck with me and always made it one of my favorites, is I remember that I had gotten a really good grade on a test when I was in, first or second grade.
Mm-hmm.
I got a check +++ or something like that. And my mom came home with Tatooine Luke, and the figure.
Right, right.
And gave it to me when I was standing in our old bathroom. And I will always remember that, just because that was like the greatest gift ever. And, I was hooked from then on in and was constantly looking for the figures and getting as many of those as I could. So.
Was your first memory of Star Wars through the toys, or was it through the film? Or maybe a storybook? Or
my first memory was through the toys and then the storybook. And then I remember watching the films, even though they were very familiar to me when I was watching them. The first time I actually remember seeing them, I was older and I had already been into it. But
right.
It was on HBO.
What was your first Star Wars theatrical experience that you remember?
The first one I remember was Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember going to see that and just being out of my mind excited. And it was everything I hoped it could be and more.
What was, out of all of them now that have come and gone, 6 films now, which one is your favorite?
It changes, if you can believe that. I have different moods. Most of the time it's Empire, because that just has it has everything. It is the sequel by which every other sequel will always be measured, because it has all the elements that made the first one great. It builds on it, plus leads you into everything else. It depends on what I'm into at the moment. I loved Attack of the Clones. I know a lot of people didn't like it nearly as much, and there are some parts that drag, but I really enjoy that era of things. I like that Jedi leading the response of the galaxy to this invading threat, and so the visualization and a lot of the sound effects in that are great. So it kind of varies. I think at some point I've said that every single film is my favorite. So,
whatever's the latest.
Yes, exactly.
Well, go back to when you were a kid and you were growing up. Did you have other Star Wars friends that you played with? What was your kind of childhood Star Wars experience like? A lot of toys, and
up until I moved, my parents moved. I did have a Star Wars friend, and he had an older brother, so they had a huge collection, and I had a nice collection as well, so we were always playing together, and he had the Death Star playset and the Millennium Falcon, and I had a snowspeeder, and, so we were always enjoying that part of it, and there were other kids in the neighborhood, and we would play that we were the characters, and I was always Luke Skywalker.
Always Luke?
Always Luke. And then eventually, after I moved to my new house, and I didn't I wasn't close to that friend anymore. I really didn't have any Star Wars friends for a long, long time, and as even more so as I got to be an adult, I was pretty much alone and in sharing that. Now, some of my friends would come with me, or would talk about the movies and things like that, but nobody else had the passion that I did until I met you, and it rekindled things for me once we started talking about it, and I realized, hey, there's a lot more people out there that are really passionate about that, just like I am.
So where did the Star Wars Renaissance find you? We're talking about probably 95 with the resurgence of the toys, and then 97 with the special edition. Where were you at that time, and How did seeing the special editions compare to seeing them as a child?
I was in college at that time, and I remember jumping in much more with the re-release of the comics. They were doing the Tales of the Jedi Knights series, or Tales of the Jedi series, with Ula Keldroma, and there was a droids book that was also coming out. So I remember going to the comic book store every month and spending what little money I had as disposable income when I was in college on getting those books and being very excited about that. I didn't jump back into the figures right away. That took a little more time. And then when the special edition came out, that was huge for me. I went to every midnight showing, and the thing that stood out for me most on that is a couple of my friends were all about staying up, you know, and going out to the movie. I think it was more the experience than actually seeing the movie themselves. And I remember going and you know, I was pretty tired, and I kept thinking, you know what, I've seen these movies so many times, I'm probably just going to, you know, nod off at some point. And I was riveted. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time, and I came out smiling. And, you know, even though I had a pretty good idea of what the new scenes were going to be, it was a whole different experience having seen A New Hope on the big screen for the first time.
I just want to say it was very similar to me. I never had any memory of seeing it, and it makes a tremendous difference.
It does. It's so much more of an experience when you do it that way. And I just remember thinking, gosh, I can't wait until Empire comes back out, because I don't really have any memory of that, too. And even Jedi, which I had memories of seeing, it's still a completely different experience when you see it on the big screen.
Okay, so fast forward to 1999. We've got, let's say 1998, the ramp up to Episode 1. Where are you? Are you still in college at this point?
I am just getting out of college.
Okay.
And ramping up towards the release of The Phantom Menace, was trying to find a job, and was really spending a lot of time, you know, my spare time, looking for things and looking forward to that, because at that point, you know, you're kind of down, you're like, I can't find a job, things aren't going the way I want them to, and, you know, I was really excited. And at that point, I was doing some teaching, and there's nobody who gets into Star Wars more than kids. And I happened to be in a class, and a couple of the kids did miss school the next day because they had gone
Wookiee Hookie?
Yes, and played Wookiee Hookie. So, you know, and they all got gold stars for that day, even though they were there. But, you know, so it was very exciting, and it was a completely different perspective. You're
kind of seeing it through your student's eyes.
Yeah. I remember actually seeing the trailer for the first time with the movie The Matrix.
Oh, yes.
And we walked out of the theater after the movie was over, and everybody was going, oh, that was an awesome movie. And I did. I really enjoyed The Matrix. But all I could think about was the Episode 1 trailer.
Wasn't it like the greatest trailer
awesome
ever?
I thought it looked like seeing those come over, those the droid...
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The droid tanks come over top of the hill in that low rumble. It was just...
Oh, yeah.
I was hooked right back in. I was taken back.
And then Episode 2 comes out, obviously, and you said that's kind of tugs at your heart as one of your favorites, that and Empire, and then Revenge of the Sith. Now, Revenge of the Sith, we got to see together,
right?
Actually.
Yeah, that Revenge of the Sith was a much different experience for me, because you and I were constantly in contact about what was going on, and, you know, I was much more in tune at that point to what was going on the web.
Mm-hmm.
Previous to that, I kept myself in the dark pretty much with the movies, but I was really into whatever was coming through on Revenge of the Sith, and we were discussing it and discussing philosophies and, you know, talking about what could lead into what, and you know, and we had a great time just going to see the movie. And
well, to bring our listeners up to speed, Pete and I have worked together for now almost 3 years, and so we literally, if you imagine a typical Cube Farm environment, that's where we're at, and they were stupid enough to put us right next to each other for the first year and a half, and it was just
there was at least
the reading, devouring Scum and devouring Force.net every day.
Every day was at least a 45-minute kind of talk about whatever was going on. And as soon as anything came up on the web, you know, we were spinning around in our chairs to tell the other person. So it was a lot of fun.
At the risk of incriminating ourselves, I think my favorite moment was when we ended up with the bootleg copy of Sith about 3 weeks after it came out, and we were just standing at your computer watching it.
Nothing going on here.
It was actually a pretty good copy, too.
It wasn't bad. That guy got arrested, by the way.
All right, so tell me, if you can, what is it about these movies, these stories, and these characters? What is it that inspires you to, and we'll get into the podcast here in a minute, but what is it that has kind of propelled you through the years, kept you a fan?
Well, I think a lot of what it is, you can't really explain, and we've talked about that a lot on the show, that for somebody who isn't into it, they just don't understand and probably won't be able to understand, but there's a fantasy world there that I can look towards that is more of a utopic thought of what I'd like, you know, this existence to be, and the young farm boy who strives to become something greater, and, you know, people who are looking for more in their lives, and you know, the conflicts that they have to deal with in order to achieve that, and the choices that they make. And I think it's very much a microcosm of what we all go through in our own lives. And there's just something magical about all the characters and the story itself that just really draws you in. And once you get into that world, you just can't get enough of it.
Very well said. You really kind of summed up exactly how I feel about the stories, too. All right, so let's fast forward now to about, 3 or 4 months ago. And I came to you with this crazy idea. I said, hey, Dustin Roberts just posted something on, I think it was Force.net, saying they were looking for podcasters. And I emailed him. And I told him that we were interested, and I told him that I would also send him a demo, and oh yeah, I want you to help me out with it. What were you thinking, and how has this experience, how has it been different than you thought, and how has it been, you know, is it like you thought it was going to be, or?
I remember just being just extraordinarily excited and thinking, hey, we might have a shot at this. This is something, you know, the two of us have spent so much time over the past couple of years just conversing and having great conversation about Star Wars, and which people couldn't understand why we were doing it. But it was one thing that I always looked forward to and always got into it. And I just had a feeling that, you know, if the two of us could get that together and bring that same type of experience to other people, it could work. And, you know, we got into it and we started doing it, and it has evolved as just a roller coaster, and it I will say that it's been more work than I expected it to be, but it's that situation where it's not really work because I enjoy doing it. You know, it takes me quite a long time to do some of the preparation for some of the stuff, like the EU character of the week and that stuff, but I have a lot of fun, and I feel like my head is going to explode with all the knowledge that I've gotten about the Star Wars universe and characters and everything else within the last 3 months. I mean, yeah. It's just absolutely amazing. I feel like I'm so much more in tune with it, and it makes the whole experience that much more fun. And I couldn't be happier with how things have gone, and all the great response that we've gotten from fans. And I'm so looking forward to all the other experiences that we're going to have heading out to C4 and just getting to meet everybody in person, and all the things that seemed like such a distant dream last summer when we were doing this. And, you know, again, it's one of those things that you can't really explain to anybody because, you know, you tell somebody that, hey, I got this podcast gig, and the first question is oh, that's great. How much does it pay? Well, nothing. But, you know, that didn't matter. I couldn't have been happier.
Yeah.
So I appreciate, I have to say thank you once again for including me on the ride, because it's been a great thing, not only getting to know everybody else, but just having fun with you. So,
well, it's been my pleasure. And I can't thank you enough for being such a great co-host you know, one half of this team. There's no way that I've ever would have been able to do this without you. So I'm going to turn the tables on you here. This is the questionnaire that you came up with, inspired by Inside the Actor Studio. And we'll do the shorter version here. And we'll start off with, what is your favorite Star Wars line?
My favorite Star Wars line is in Revenge of the Sith, when Anakin says, Palpatine says, you would like to, or you're going to kill me. And Anakin says, I sure would like to. And then Palpatine says, I know you would. I can feel your anger. It gives you focus. Makes you stronger. That just gave me goosebumps.
Very well done. You just gave me goosebumps.
So that's my favorite one.
All right. Well, what Star Wars moment makes you smile?
I think probably the introduction of Yoda.
Mm.
And it made me smile when I first started watching, because I just love the character, and he was so Muppetish, and you know, it appealed to everything that I loved as being a kid. And then after seeing him in the original, or the prequels, you get a whole new sense for what he is, and you realize how intelligent it is,
right?
And that he's testing Luke the entire time, and testing his patience and his mm-hmm. abilities, and it just takes on a whole new meaning. So that it's that duology that really makes it a lot of fun.
And what Star Wars moment makes you sad?
Oh, definitely Yoda dying.
Mm. Yeah, that goes. Yeah. Who is your favorite Star Wars character?
My favorite Star Wars character is probably Darth Maul. Mm. Just because I'm a big fan of warriors and that very well choreographed fight scenes, and nobody does it better than Ray Park and Ewan McGregor. So that and Liam Neeson as well. But
yeah,
that whole scene just that really pulled me back into the Star Wars universe and let me know that there's even more out there than what we've already seen.
And what job would you like to do in the Star Wars universe?
I would have to be a Jedi Master.
Wow. Not just a Jedi Knight.
No, I'd have to be a Jedi Master, and probably would turn to the dark side at some point, because the man would try and be holding me down, just like in my real life.
And what job would you not want to do in the Star Wars universe?
I would not want to be the guy who has to lean over the rail while the Star Destroyer is firing. Or the Death Star is firing, checking the beam, go, yeah, it's hot.
That's the best answer we've had by far. Okay. All right. Now, if another Star Wars movie was to be made and you were cast in it, what would you want George Lucas to say to you when he said cut on your final scene?
I would want him to say, that was everything I wanted it to be. I'd like you to take over the Star Wars franchise and make 10 more movies.
Pete Nadel, everybody. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks, Jay.
Hey, what are you trying to push on us?
A fine addition to my collection.
He's worth a lot to me.
We'll kick off your collecting segment with Hasbro, of course. And we went to the one, the only, Dan the Man Curto, for a complete wrap-up about the Saga Legends 07 poll. Take it away, Dan. I mean, now that the Saga Legends 2007 poll is over and done with, what are some of your parting thoughts? And is this something we might be able to look forward to in the future, something like it?
Well, I'm pretty happy with the turnout. Some of the figures that I would have picked didn't make it through, but that's okay, because this wasn't, as we talked about last time, this isn't the Curto greatest hits. This is the fans' choice. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I think it's a good line. It's well balanced with main characters and background characters, troopers and droids, and you know, just a nice round assortment. And I know a lot of people are, you know, that maybe, oh geez, we got another Darth Vader, we got another R2-D2, but what people have to remember is that you know, this is a line for kids too.
Right.
So the first, I think it was the first 19 or so figures were chosen before the poll, and those were basically the ones that they had in mind for kids.
Okay.
You know, and some of them are dual audience, you know, like Troopers. Kids, well, they like the Troopers, but they don't army build as much as the adult collectors do, you know.
Right, right. Well, it's funny because, I mean, looking at them, I would say that the overwhelming majority of them are, I would say, of figures of the last 5 years. Certainly really nothing from the first half of the resurgence, you know, of the figures.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good point, because a lot of, as we've seen in the forums especially, a lot of people prefer the more recent figures as opposed to some of the older classics. So anything from Power of the Jedi on up is pretty much, you know, that's as far back as they seem to be willing to go.
Hmm.
And a lot of that is due to the increase in articulation that we've seen recently, better sculpting, better paint application. I mean, as the technology has improved, you know, the figures have too.
Right, right.
And, I mean, admittedly, some of the Power of the Force 2 figures, for example, they look dated, you know, and
yeah,
they have been updated already, so... Although I still have my favorites from that line, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the grumpy old collector in me, is that I sometimes like the old ones.
Right, right. Yeah, we talked about that last time.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the you know, the vintage guys are crazy that way. I mean, they don't think anything happened after 1985.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, even though, I mean, we were counting down to the number one, that was always the goal throughout the entire tournament. And when we got to the final eight, a lot of people were like, oh, okay, well, there's the eight that were picked. Well, no, not necessarily. Although, in retrospect, turns out all eight were picked.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So
was that a good, was that a nice moment for you when you finally got to post the entire selection, what is it, four different waves?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there will be four different waves. The first two will be out, let's see, the first one will be out in April. The second one will be out in May, and that actually will include the first of the fans' choice figures. If you remember, the final four was the pit droids, the dark trooper, the imperial officers, and the sand trooper, the evolutions sand trooper. Well, that was already picked prior to the voting. So they said, okay, well, since the fans obviously want the sand trooper, let's find out which one we want the most, which turned out to be the really, really dirty sergeant trooper.
Right.
So that's the one that's coming out in wave two. And then for the rest of the year, starting in July and then in August, all of the remaining figures will be the fans' choice. And in fact, we originally were going to just look for eight, and that changed to 10.
Hmm.
A big reason why, I mean, I'm sure you recall the original trilogy collection category from the forum voting.
Oh, yes.
Pretty much all clone troopers. So all of those Entertainment Earth sets, everybody said, well, we want them. So that was not unnoticed, and Hasbro looked at it and said, okay, you know what? Let's make up a generic clone trooper officer slot and just randomly rotate all the ranks and the colors throughout the year.
I tell you, that is what really impressed me the most. This is not me just throwing bouquets and laurels and plaudits at Hasbro, but the fact that they agreed to, you know, in the case of the Imperial officers to do the running change, in the case of the pit droids to do the running change, and now with these clone troopers to do the running change, I mean, that's, you know, that's more investment on their part. I mean, granted, there's more product that's going to move, but I mean, it was nice of them to coordinate that and throw that out there.
Yeah, well, you know, that was a direct result of what the voting called for. You know, a lot of people are kind of thinking like, well, gee, you know, Hasbro is going to pretty much do whatever they want no matter what we say. Well, no, I mean, yeah, they can pick whatever they want, but the whole point was to get the fan input, and I can tell you some of the figures, even that they had picked previously, changed due to the voting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Shock Trooper was already picked, but they weren't really sure. It wasn't 100% guaranteed, you
right.
know. The the clone trooper from Attack of the Clones, I mean, there was a lot of support against that guy when he went up against Dirge in, I think it was week three. So they're like, definitely, we're going to give him his own slot so people can army build that figure. Because I tell you, that's one of the figures that, for the past few years, I never saw that on the shelves. Big news, of course, we can't forget this, is the 501st clone trooper with the super articulated body.
Oh, yes, that right, exactly.
That has never been out before, and originally it was going to be the one that we've seen with the tank gunner, the ATTE tank gunner mm-hmm. body, you know, mm-hmm. the one that we've seen, Tactical Ops Trooper, and we saw him this year as 501st Clone Trooper. Mm-hmm. Well, they were going to bring him back, and during the course of the tournament, I kind of brought up the fact that, you know, we saw this prototype back at Comic-Con in 2005, and whatever happened to that? And what was explained to me is that because of the tooling available at the time, they just said, you know, that particular figure that you saw was a prototype that they sent overseas and said, you know, use whatever mold is available. And if you remember, at the time, the Commander Gree was using the super articulated body sculpt.
Right.
So they said, okay, well, you know, it came out in the same wave. Let's use the clone gunner. And he has a removable helmet, and you could spread his legs apart, you know, so that was kind of a neat feature.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the super articulated body is the one that everybody wants.
Right.
So I was able to make a strong case for that.
well, that's very unique
in this line,
right? Because, I mean...
Yeah. Even though we said in the beginning this was just going to be 100% repacks, there was actually some concern on Hasbro's part. It's like, look, we don't want people to get the wrong idea. This is, you know, technically a new figure. And I said, listen, I assure you, people will not mind.
No, you know? I'm sure. I'm sure.
You know, that's one that's definitely going to be popular. And I know I'm going to buy a bunch when I see it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's cool. And I mean, clearly the troop builders, they're going to owe you a big debt. So if you're out there at C4 and you see Dan Curto, you could go up and give him a big thank you.
Absolutely.
So Dan, like I said, to just kind of wrap this up, at the end of the day, great contest, great promotion. Hasbro seems pleased with it. You're pleased with it. Where do we go from here? What are you looking forward to as we approach the 30th anniversary year next year?
Well, first, I'm going to take a little bit of a break. This has been a lot of work behind the scenes, and I don't know if people really understand that, because we had some issues with the poll throughout the voting that had to be fixed pretty much on the fly. There was a lot of photography that needed to be done on my end to get this started in the short time frame that we had in the beginning. But, I mean, that's something I enjoy doing, so it was sort of a challenge, but also kind of fun.
Thank you, Dan, and if you would like to get some photos, because it's kind of hard to remember all these figures that are going to be included in this collection, check it out at rebelscum.com. Dan does have a complete wrap-up, again, with photos that link to that particular figure's archived images over at the site at rebelscum.com. So make sure you check that out. Overall, I think it's a good combination of figures. I'm surprised to see so many of the recent figures of more recent years. You got a lot of Episode 3 figures. You got a lot of you got a number of Saga Collection figures. You've got some vintage also. So I mean, it's
a good mix, and I think the majority of the figures are ones that I will look to include in my collection.
Now, there was a little stir over at the forums at rebelscum.com because Lee's Toy Review got a big scoop. They got images of the second wave of the 30th anniversary collection figures. I guess we'll call this wave two. They're calling it the Tatooine wave. Includes Han Solo, the Ralph McQuarrie concept art Boba Fett figure, Death Star Trooper, Biggs Darklighter, the Rebel Honor Guard, and a non-pictured Luke Skywalker figure. But at any rate, these look really good. I mean, we're talking about some retooling, some different paint apps and some completely new figures, of course, the Ralph McQuarrie concept art Boba Fett being the big standout. Now, what the stink was is if you were on the forums, somebody came on and said, hey, guess what? You can see this at Lee's. Actually, Dan did. Dan posted the news. Hey, Lee's has got this. And so all of a sudden, everybody was like, well, who's going to scan the images in? I need the photos. I need the photos now. Put them in now. And I mean, it really got kind of nasty. Some people were like, come on, I know you have a scanner. I got to see these photos. So, you know, several hours later, somebody went out and grabbed a copy of it that had a scanner and scanned them in. We want to thank them for that. Looking at these photos again, I really, really like them. Particularly, that Ralph McQuarrie Boba Fett is fantastic. Now, I did get some clarification from Dan earlier today. The question is raised, what the heck is that in his belly? What's that in his belly? And does he come with two heads or is it going to be a running change? The answer is apparently there was a hideaway gun concept, blaster concept that was a part of the original design of the character and also a couple of different helmet variations. So it's going to come with two heads, which I think is very cool.
Very cool.
I'd rather have that than a running variation on a what's already going to be a pretty limited edition figure.
Yeah.
Now, the Han Solo comes with the communications headset that he had when he was in the cockpit, in the gun turret. The Death Star Trooper, probably next to the Ralph McQuarrie figure, the big standout here. Mm-hmm. Removable helmet, some great retooling there, pretty close to getting a whole new figure. As far as I can remember, Biggs Darklighter, finally a removable helmet. Biggs, they're using what has become probably the most popular of the X-Wing fighter pilot body sculpts. One of the most updated ones, which is the best. I mean, really, why do they need to change that too much? Unless you're doing Porkins, obviously. But for the most part, these guys are all about the same. And the Rebel Honor Guard. Now, that's interesting. We might put him next to Tonka Tom, the... the Naboo Royal Guard. It's cool to have this character, but it wasn't the most inspired costume that they designed for the film.
With the helmet and the kind of sight thing, he looks pretty cool. But if you take off the helmet and take that out of his hand, he definitely looks like a 1945 G.I. Joe.
Yeah, he really does. He really does. They also have a lot of great photos of some of the previous waves and some of the waves that have yet to be seen in terms of on the shelves. Saga Wave 7, which is, I believe, showing up now. See, I'm kind of behind. When I go out, all I see are still greatest battles and some leftovers of prior waves. I'm not really seeing much anything new. Also, if you're curious what this Walmart exclusive wave looks like, they've got photos of that as well. So, we want to thank our forum members for making sure that we get to see these now that they've calmed down a little bit. So, make sure you check those out. Now, one figure that is brand new is the Star Wars Fans Choice figure number one, Darth Revan. Now, am I saying that right? It is Revan, right?
It is Revan, yes.
Okay. Now, I know that you actually check on those pronunciations. You have a guide, right?
I do have a guide, but I also played the game, so that's how they pronounce in the game, so I'm going with that.
Because I've heard people say Raven and whatnot, but I think it's safe to say that it is Revan. Revan?
I think somebody called him Jeff.
That was his mom. Yeah. Anyway, you got to check this out because these photos are great. Now, it's still in the prototype phase, so it's in that sort of flesh-colored sculpty, I guess. But you can tell, and I actually went on to Wikipedia just to do some comparisons, and they've done an outstanding job. So you can see more photos at wizarduniverse.com. The link is at rebelscum.com, of course. And check it out. It is Star Wars Fans Choice number one, Darth Revan.
Very excited.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's just so cool to see these EU characters finally make it into plastic. And speaking of EU characters making it into plastic, we finally have some packaged photos of the Ambush on Ilum battle pack, which is going to include the much coveted Snow Bunny Padme.
Wow.
That was appropriate. Yeah.
If there's any reason why I am going home alone tonight, that might be it.
Anyway, Rebel Reader, Jedi Adrian was pursuing some images taken at the World Characters Convention in Tokyo and spotted packaged shots of next year's Clone Wars-inspired Ambush on Ilum Battle Pack with 3PO, R2, Snowbunny Padme, and a Chameleon Attack Droid. I'll be honest, the photo's not real good. This is like, why is it taking forever to get some quality photos of this piece? This is so frustrating. This is probably of all the battle packs coming out, in the near in the coming months. This is the one that I'm most excited about because it's got an all new figure, Padme. It has nothing to do with the fact that she's Snow Bunny, much. But I don't know why it's taking so long. But this will whet your appetite a little bit. You can kind of get an idea of what it's going to look like. The exclusive Walmart wave should be hitting stores sometime soon in early 2007. Or I should say, sometime soon to early 2007. The folks over at actionfigure.com have some photos of this wave, detailed photos packaged and loose. So if you're debating whether or not it's going to be worth going out and trying to find these figures, check out the high-resolution photos that they have over there at actionfigure.com. Overall, I can't see my photos right now. I don't know why. But overall, from what I remember, granted for a wave of mainly repacks, it's cool to see some of these characters, some of like these Cantina aliens on a card for the first time on a single card. So I'm excited about this wave. I'm definitely going to be, I'm a completist, so I'm going to be trying to find it. Man, I hope Entertainment Earth gets this.
You've become so lazy.
I have. I've become terribly lazy. Well, anyway, you might want to check those out. Trouble on Tatooine. That's right. More Unleashed Battle Packs have been revealed. There's a whole wave, a whole slew of Unleashed Battle Packs featuring this theme, Trouble on Tatooine. Make sure you check those out. Look for the Sand Trooper Search, the Cantina Encounter, Tusken Raiders, Jawas and Droids, and the previously seen but now named The Streets of Mos Eisley. These sets are coming your way in early 2007. In looking at these, I'll be honest with you. We've talked about this before. The Galactic Heroes are growing on me. And I had thought of all of the new lines, this was going to grow on me. It's actually having the opposite effect. I'm liking them less and less. And I don't know if it's just because I like the Unleashed, the 7-inch Unleashed so much, and I look at these as kind of a sad replacement. I mean, I understand. I mean, we've been through the Q&As with Hasbro enough. We know why. These things must be selling. They don't do much for me.
I'm just going to keep my mouth shut at this point.
We all know your feelings on it. But anyway, if you're a collector and you're a fan of this line, you want to make sure you check out the photos. Great pictures at rebelscum.com for this Trouble on Tatooine wave of Unleashed Battle Packs. And speaking of Galactic Heroes, growing on you, I have a feeling that this one you're going to pick up if you see it. We have some photos of the Darth Maul Galactic Heroes with his Sith Speeder. We've got a loose image of this particular figure, and it's pretty cool. Come on. There's something charming and unique about this.
Of the worst figure line that I can think of, this is the best one.
Oh, what a compliment. All right, I hope you're listening, Hasbro.
Slap in the face. I could count myself out for their Christmas card this year.
That's right.
Yeah. I do it every year.
We're not on their mailing list either. Anyway, if you Darth Maul fans, and you're a huge Darth Maul fan, you collect just about everything Darth Maul you can get your hands on. And this one's going to make, if I have to buy it for you, this thing is going to make it into your collection.
I'm going to come home with it, and then you're going to rail me on the show. And
and the latest Q&A with Hasbro, number 20. We've got some questions and their answers. Question is, it was rumored a few years back that a Jedi Starfighter Episode 2 version was developed with a hyperspace ring. Is there any chance that we will see this cool accessory developed for our fighters, both versions, please, in the future? Hasbro says, yes? Question mark?
Is that an answer?
At some point, we will do this. So, I think that's a great idea. That's something that has been missing from those vehicles. And it's a very, it was a, such a cool concept when you saw it for the first time. And it's just, it needs to be done in that scale. So I'm glad to hear that. Next question is, why is the upcoming Saga Collection number 64 figure being called Commander Apo? He is clearly modeled after Commander Bao, as he appears in comics with the pauldron, not Commander Apo, who in the film wears the same armor and markings as the other 501st clones. If it is to differentiate between him as a commander and the regular grunts, why not just call him Commander Bao for the sake of accuracy? And I went on to Wookiee and just did a little bit of research, a little bit of fact-checking, and they are right. This figure that's coming out is really Commander Bao, not Commander Apo. And here's Hasbro. I love Hasbro's answer. We made the assumption that it was Apo who appeared in The Purge and took our cue from that. Well, there you go.
There it is.
In other words, you're right. But
but we didn't know beforehand, so leave us alone.
Yeah. We didn't know that. So we'll forgive them. You know, hey, anybody's human. They can make a mistake. You're still getting the figure.
That's right.
Right?
And once you take him out of the package, he is whoever you want him to be.
Right.
He's just Tonka Tom.
Or that girl I met last night.
Repeating our tough story, I met you at the bar last night, and I forgot your number. Jenny, please call me.
All right, moving along. Okay, folks. Question from our own folks at Rebel Scum. I like the way you are making the EU comic 2 packs, and I was wondering what factors go into the selecting of what comics to use and what figures to make. Hasbro's answer. We meet and go through our favorite issues that resonated with cool stories and great characters. We keep a running list and update it as we get caught up with the entirety of the Dark Horse and Marvel library. On our spreadsheet, we note whether we would need new sculpts or can work with the existing ones. We also note whether there is any inherent kid appeal to the figures or whether they're just purely collector-targeted. We base our final selections, in close collaboration with Lucasfilm and consultation with Dark Horse, on a balance of all factors so the wave has balanced kid and collector appeal, some important new tools, but a manageable quantity, affordable cost, etc. In short, it's not unlike the process we go through for basic figures, creating balance that will enable the line to succeed at retail. Balance. Yes.
Everyone strives for balance.
It is the wave that will bring balance. So that kind of gives you an idea of their thinking process. It, like they said, they point out, is very similar to what we've been hearing all along, but it hasn't been, that question hasn't been addressed in the context of the comic figures. Interesting to know that they go and they actually confer with Dark Horse too on that, not just Lucasfilm. So they're getting input from all sides. And of course, through this Q&A, they're getting input from the fans and the collectors. Another question, is the Snow Bunny Padme figure from the Target exclusive Ambush on Ilum battle pack an all new sculpt, and is she heavily articulated or pre-posed? This goes back to what we were just talking about, the this battle pack that we just can't get any decent photos of. The answer is, it's an all-new sculpt, and she is not pre-posed, but has normal articulation. All right. I'm looking over, and you're laughing hysterically. And we're, in the interest of keeping the show G-rated, we're going to not even ask you to elaborate on
that. Let's move along, please.
All right. And next question. Can we get a picture of the 2007 Super Battle Droid sans removable flames? Your answer is, I'm showing the picture right now. You can't see it. But there, but there is. They sent a picture. So you've got it. There it is. The Super Battle Droid sans removable flames. He looks great. So if you're interested in that, go over to the roundup posted at Rebel Scum. Last photo. Last questions. The titanium diecast figures were very prominent at this year's San Diego Comic-Con, yet only four from the entire line have really shown up en masse at retail, while a few others have seemed to have made it in limited quantities. Is this an indication for how the line is performing? Can we expect to see the figures shown at SDCC to make their way to retail, or will the line be scaled back? The answer. More are on the way. Titanium figures have had a very tricky production process with some delays due to various issues. Now, recently, I I called you on Black Friday to let you know that I found some of the most recent titaniums. I found 3PO. I found the Clone Trooper. Who else did I find?
General Grievous.
And General Grievous. That's right. So I phoned you up and said, Pete, I found these. I swear you told me you wanted them. Do you want me to pick them up for you? And you're like, no, I'll pass. I was really excited to call you.
You make it sound like I was being a complete jerk about it.
Well, not a complete jerk.
And that's really where the story ends, because I was. But in reality, again, this is more of a Darth Maul specific thing. So I was waiting for that particular figure.
Yep. And, well, this is interesting to know that really it's a production issue. And I can see why. I would imagine the production on these figures is probably pretty complicated, given all the materials and everything that's being used. Okay, here we go. One more question. Or, no, excuse me. Second to last question. How many waves and figures will we see in the Saga Legends line? Well, if you were listening to Dan Curto earlier, he told you that it'll have four waves, with the fan's choice coming in the last two. However, it'll be multiple remixes of the waves, just like the regular basic figure line. And last question, with non-movie stories becoming the future of Star Wars, it seems like you are, or will be, really jumping into tying in the comics and the future TV series into the toy line. The legacy of the Force novel series is right in the thick of things now. Do you have plans in offering characters from this series or other novels into the line? The answer is, first, I would rather say that we are embracing the EU storytelling right alongside of, and not replacing, the movies. The movies are the foundation and will remain that way for a good long time. We know the novels are looming out there, but it's tough to make the direct connection to figures since they're not an inherently visual media. We'll have to see how these figures do on future fans' choice polls, and if the strength of the characters continues to resonate, we will consider them. So, good to know. That it's not no for the novel characters and the...
That answer makes a lot of sense because, as they said, it's a completely visual thing. So in order for them to really move it into a figure that may be popular, they may need to move it into a comic book or illustrate it somehow, just so fans are all on the same wavelength when they see the figure, as opposed to thinking, well, that's not how that looks.
Yeah, otherwise we get some kind of strange figures, like when Hasbro just kind of goes off on a whim, you know, the Jedi training figures. Remember that from the Power of the Jedi line? He had like Obi-Wan kind of swaddled in some sort of winter garb. It was kind of strange.
I like the word swaddled. Fans of the Millennium Falcon can check out Rebelscum.com for photos of the newly arrived Master Replicas Millennium Falcon. Now, this is a studio scale size replica of the Millennium Falcon, and it's gigantic, but it is so fantastic. It's
unbelievable.
You have to check out the photos because you just can't describe it by podcast alone. You have to really look at the photos because not only are they spectacular photos of what is an incredible piece of replica material, but it's also displayed extraordinarily nicely by Mr. Wise, and it's really a great piece that he's added to his own collection, which is fantastic.
As wonderful as the piece is, I mean, you know, look around you. Would it look that cool in my house?
No, it's kind of like, that'd kind of be like bringing out a nice steak at McDonald's. Both have their own nice cues, but there's a little different wavelength there.
Oh, but this thing is extraordinary.
It is.
And it really needs to be seen to be believed. Also, the custom cabinetry and display that Philip has created. Oh, if I were a carpenter. LEGO fans can check out the official LEGO site at their Shop at Home side for currently available 2007 sets are finally there. The General Grievous Starfighter, the AT-ST, and the Y-Wing Fighter, and the Imperial Landing Craft, all available at LEGO.com at their Shop at Home side for pre-order now. So you might want to check that out. There's some great photos there. In case this line is just, it's been going on for so long, I think that at least I have a hard time remembering everything that's come out before. I don't actively collect this line, but I do like to kind of keep up with what's being released because it's such a unique take on all the Star Wars designs and characters and everything. So it's worth checking out. Not much Lego news right now. We'll try to keep you updated on how the inventory is coming. If you're a Lego collector and you're having some hard time, having difficulty finding some of these items, send us an email at podcast@theforce.net. We're trying to keep an eye on that particular issue.
All the classic battles.
Delta Squad, execute door breach.
Any way you want.
We have all but destroyed the Jedi Knights.
Fight as a Jedi.
The Old Republic is crippled.
Fight in space.
Darth 3PO?
Well, the Satellite Awards have announced their nominations for 2006. Now, Star Wars Empire at War and LEGO Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, have both been nominated for Outstanding Game based on a previous medium, book, film, TV, etc. So check out StarWars.com for a list of all the nominations through Variety Magazine, and hopefully one of these Star Wars titles will be bringing home the award, as it were. Fans of Risk, and more specifically, fans of Star Wars Risk, can be excited this holiday season as they are releasing an original trilogy, Star Wars Risk, as a follow-up to the Episode II Risk that came out a couple years ago. Now, in the original trilogy Risk game, specifically, you will be able to play as either the Rebellion, the Empire, or the Hutts, and there will be 42 planets grouped into six systems. And each faction will have two pieces, a Rebel Soldier and a Snowspeeder for the Rebellion, a Stormtrooper and an AT-ST for the Empire, and, of course, a Gamorrean Guard and the Rancor for the Hutts. So check out that. I know if I was a big fan of Risk for quite some time, and always putting a Star Wars theme on any of these classic board games is a lot of fun. And I have to... This kind of takes me back a little bit, only from the standpoint that with all the computer technology, you know, we're moving on to different next-gen platforms, and we've got 60, 80, 120 gig hard drives that we can run these multiplayer online video games. We're still moving back to board games. People still love board games. I mean, we're still getting Risk. We're still getting Monopoly. We had the release of the Star Wars Miniatures Spaceship Battles. So there's still that hands-on feel that people love. Even though there's so many spectacular things you can do with a computer, there's still something about sitting around a table and playing a board game with friends and family.
There's nothing like it. I'm a big Monopoly fan, and I've got a couple of computer versions of Monopoly. And I hardly ever play them. They're just, it's not really fun. I've even tried playing with other people in the household, and it's just... It's not as cool as just feeling, you know, those little hotels and the little, you know, all that. It's just there's something tactile that you need. And absolutely. So it's cool to see that. I got to tell you, I've never played Risk.
Really? That surprises me quite a lot.
Well, it's about to change.
I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father, before the dark times, before the Empire.
Always in motion is the future, beyond the outer rim.
Master Voss has moved his troops to Bos Plitty.
Not a whole lot in EU news this week, but if you are or have been waiting with bated breath for Rebellion number 5, it's finally out. Should be out as this podcast goes live. Should be out this week. So check your local comic retailer for that. Other than that, not a whole lot. Some announcements on the 30th anniversary collection or collector's series by Dark Horse. Now, these are the limited edition hardcover reprints of Dark Horse's graphic novels. These are only going to be available through direct market retail outlets, and each volume's print run is limited to just the initial orders, and it's not going to be reprinted. So make sure you're on the lookout for those. A few announcements there, so check it out at rebelscum.com for Jovial Jay's announcement there. Speaking of Jovial Jay, we've got a lot of Jovial Jay news this week. Not only do we have part 4 of his intro to the EU, but he's going to be a special guest co-host in just a few minutes when we do our listener mail. He wanted to personally respond to One of our emails from last week, when they took him to task a little bit on his claim that Tatooine is an EU name. Yes. Why are you so far away from the microphone? Why? Am I alone here?
I was being sucked backwards.
Anyway, so let's get right to it. Here is Jay's intro to the EU, part 4.
Our last segment on the rise of the Empire covered a lot of territory, and today's segment is not much different. The Rebellion era was the first expanded universe era that was explored, even before it had a name. This is the era of the original trilogy, the Marvel Comics, and a current Dark Horse series. Of all the eras, this one has been mined pretty well in terms of content and completeness, but just when you think that every story has been told, a new one pops up, like Timothy Zahn's Allegiance, which is due next February. I've mentioned the word Apocrypha before, and that's what this era has produced for fans. If you recall, Apocrypha is any story that falls outside of accepted continuity or that has been rendered moot by an official source. Things that spring to mind are elements of Splinters of the Mind's Eye, Luke's lightsaber battle with Vader being the big one, Han's meeting with Jabba the Hutt, with only one T, in the Marvel Comics. See, he wasn't really a big slug, he was this kind of yellowy, walrusy sort of alien. Yeah. Then there's also the tale of an older Ben Kenobi during the Clone Wars, also from the Marvel series. What's interesting about the Star Wars fan in these issues is that we seem to find a way to ignore the small elements of the story and make it work in a larger established continuity. For the longest time, the entire Marvel Comics line, except for the film adaptations, was considered by most to be end-level canon or non-continuity canon. It's only in the last 10 years or so that this has turned around. Many elements of the Marvel series have crept into the established continuity. For example, Tag Co., the group operated by Baron Tag, showed up in the West End Games materials, while races such as Zeltrons are still at large in the Dark Horse comics today. Fans and the creators took a closer look at the issues and found that the internal continuity of the Marvel series was actually quite consistent. Sure, Boba Fett escaped from the Sarlacc only to fall back in at the end of the issue, and there was that weird Dark Lady of the Sith named Lumia, but hey, she's actually not so obscure as she used to be, is she? So without any further ado, I'll get into the major stories of the Rebellion era. We start chronologically with the Empire at its height in Dark Horse's Empire series. This series featured arcs on such characters as Biggs Darklighter, Lieutenant Jannik Sunbur, and several Vader and Leia stories, plus a Boba Fett one-shot. The series led into the current Dark Horse series Rebellion, where we find that Lieutenant Jannik Sunbur is actually Luke's childhood friend Tank in the My Brother, My Enemy storyline. Sprinkled throughout this era are issues known as Classic Star Wars. This is Dark Horse's term for books that were not originally published by Dark Horse, but reprinted from other Marvel stories or newspaper strips. I won't be focusing on them in particular, but just so you know that they're there. Next comes Star Wars from the Adventures of Luke Skywalker, which was obviously the novelization of the film. There are also comics, young readers' books, as well as numerous other versions of this story. During A New Hope, there's also the Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina short story collection, featuring individual tales of many of the creatures and aliens in and around the Mos Eisley Cantina. These are followed by the first few books in the Galaxy of Fear Young Readers series. This series of 12 books in total is sort of a R.L. Stine horror-like series set in the Star Wars universe, featuring Tosh Aranda, Zak Aranda, and their Shiodo uncle, Mammon Hool. Hool, incidentally, is the in-universe author of the Tatooine chapter of the Illustrated Star Wars Universe, as well as the Essential Guide to Alien Species. This is followed by the poorly received Galaxies, The Ruins of Dantooine, which is based on the popular Galaxies Online game. That's really all I have to say on that. Dark Horse has a couple of miniseries here in the first year following A New Hope, which include Vader's Quest and River of Chaos. Quest focuses on Vader's search for the pilot that blew up the Death Star. Its four covers can be placed end-to-end to form a mural by artist Dave Gibbons of Watchmen fame. Chaos was a Princess Leia series, and also one of the first Dark Horse miniseries. It has yet to be made into a trade paperback. Splinter of the Mind's Eye by Alan Dean Foster is the next in line, featured both as a comic and a book. It holds the distinction of being the first EU story, as it was published in 1978. Splinter is followed by Star Wars Allegiance, a tale of core characters, a rogue stormtrooper squadron, and Mara Jade in her role as the Emperor's Hand. As I mentioned earlier, this book is due out in February of 2007. We then hit 3 years after A New Hope with the Star Wars Episode V, Empire Strikes Back, and all of its adaptations. Here, since Han was frozen in carbonite in this story, Marvel replaced his character with Lando for the remaining issues before Return of the Jedi. You can find a book of short stories also here called Tales of the Bounty Hunters, as well as the 1996 multimedia extravaganza Shadows of the Empire, which include a novel and a comic series, each telling one part of a larger story. Then, 1 year later in the timeline, is Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. Marvel's adaptation of this fell outside the monthly series and was produced as a four-issue series instead of the six issues as the previous two films had. Book readers can also find Tales from Jabba's Palace as part of this timeline, completing the trilogy of anthologies. One day after the destruction of Death Star 2 comes the Truce of Bakor, in which our heroes must fight off the invading Sirook fleet, kind of a pre-Yuuzhan Vong invasion. At the same time is the Bounty Hunter trilogy, which features the story of how Boba Fett escaped from the Sarlacc, and if that wasn't enough for one bounty hunter, he also then goes on to destroy the Bounty Hunters Guild in this uneven trilogy of books featuring the Mandalorian armor, slave ship, and hard merchandise. Dark Horse completes its part of the era with a series of Jabba the Hutt one-shots, a Mara Jade six-issue series, the sequel to Shadows of the Empire called Evolution, which features Guri, Shizor's human replica droid. There was also an immensely popular X-Wing Rogue Squadron comic series, which broke down into approximately 9 story arcs and featured Wedge and his X-Wing squadron fighting the Empire. This series will continue in the next era as a set of novels. Finally, about 5 years after A New Hope is the Jedi Prince series, a young reader series that is about as low on the C-level canonical scale as you can go. It features Luke and a young character named Ken as they battle the Emperor's son, Trioculus. Titles here include The Glove of Darth Vader, The Lost City of the Jedi, Zorba the Hutt's Revenge, Mission from Mount Yoda, Queen of the Empire, and Prophets of the Dark Side. Remember that these are not all that's occurring during this time frame, as there are always other short stories and tidbits that are created for backstory and other mediums. However, this should give you a guide to the major works in place during the Rebellion Era. Please be sure to check our show notes for more information on the Rebellion Era, and listen in for future segments where I will continue to give you an introduction to the remaining eras and keep you updated on the current happenings in that galaxy far, far away.
Thank you, Jay Shepherd, Jay Shepherd, Jay Shepherd, and you will, of course, be joining us in just a few moments in our listener mail segment. But before we do, now I noticed that Jay had mentioned Wedge a couple of times, and it just so happens.
Coincidentally, Wedge is, of course, our Expanded Universe Character of the Week.
Now, this had to have been a real challenge for you.
It's a pretty massive undertaking just because he appears in so many different things. And for the first time, I didn't list out his individual appearances. I kind of wrapped them all up into their individual trilogies or duologies or whatever they were. So if you want to see a full list, check out our show notes, because the full list there's going to be a link there to a full list of his chronological appearances. But a lot of what he's involved in are small battles and skirmishes and things that happen in separate little novels. So some of them just come up as blurbs during EU Character of the Week as I kind of run through his career. But it doesn't get into the depth of the story,
right,
and how expansive the stories can be. So,
and we've had some emails from folks saying, actually asking you to delve into some of the film characters. And so here you go.
And as we get further and further into some of this, and I get a little more comfortable with doing some of it, we'll probably see a little bit more of this. So hopefully this one works out pretty well and you all enjoy it.
All right. So here we go with Wedge.
Wedge grew up on Corellia, the son of Jagged and Xena Antilles, who owned a refueling space station in the planet's orbit. Wedge split his time each year between the station and a farm school on the planet.
Just not a farmer, Owen.
When he was 7, his sister Sayal left the family to pursue an acting career. As he became a more accomplished pilot, he began to work with the bounty hunter Booster Tarek. At age 17, his life was turned upside down when the pirate Loka Kask attempted to pull away from the refueling station before detaching, in order to avoid capture. The ensuing fire would have killed everyone on the station, but Wedge's parents sacrificed themselves to save the others. Wedge was filled with anger and took an old Z-95 headhunter and pursued Hask's ship and destroyed it. With the insurance money from his parents, he purchased a freighter and began to run supplies for the Rebellion. During an open call for fighter pilots, he joined them. He went into action right away and began flying missions and guerrilla raids on the Empire. When R2-D2 brought back the plans from the Death Star, Wedge joined the group of fighters in the raid to attempt to destroy the space station under the designation Red 2.
Look at the size of that thing.
Cut the shot on Red 2.
He was forced to abort the mission when his fighter took damage to its stabilizer.
I'm hit! I can't stay with you.
Get clear, Wedge.
You can't do any more good back there.
Sorry.
After the Battle of Yavin, Luke Skywalker and Wedge formed Rogue Squadron. The unit became legendary and won many victories for the Rebellion. Wedge flew missions with them on Raltir, Tatooine, Jabim, Callisto 6, Perlupo, and an attack on Thylla. On a mission to capture Moff Cole Seerdan, Wedge himself was captured and sent to Kessel. The Rogues flew to the mining planet and rescued him.
I'm here to rescue you.
During the Battle of Hoth, Wedge flew a snowspeeder against the invading Imperials and took down an AT-AT in the process.
That got him! I see it, Wedge. Good work.
During the subsequent evacuation, he flew his X-Wing as an escort for the Rebel transports.
The first transport is away. The first transport is away.
After the escape, the Rogues went at it again, and Wedge was instrumental in the First Battle of Bakura, Second Battle of Geonosis, the mission at Destrillon, and the Battle of Debrillen, where he disabled a super laser targeting the orbiting Rebel fleet. Wedge also helped to infiltrate the Fondor shipyards in a captured TIE Hunter to destroy a partially completed Super Star Destroyer. He soon became leader of Rogue Squadron after Luke Skywalker left to continue his Jedi training.
Thanks, Wedge.
And helped battle Prince Shizor in the Battle of Gaul and the rescue of Princess Leia from Coruscant. On both those occasions, Wedge and the Rogues ran interference for the Millennium Falcon to escape, despite being vastly outnumbered.
Copy, Rogue Leader.
Following the skirmish with Black Sun, Wedge led the Rogues to Arum to destroy the Superstar Destroyer Vengeance, and in the process, stole the Tidarium shuttle from an Imperial Naval Academy. Wedge was one of the fleet commanders during the raid on the second Death Star, and his shot to the deflection tower assisted in destroying the space station.
I'm already on my way out.
Immediately following the Battle of Endor, Wedge, Tycho Kelchu, Wes Janson, and Derek Hobby Kilvin formed the cornerstones of Rogue Squadron, and they continued their legendary service to the Rebellion. The group teamed up with the Imperials at Bakura to ward off the invading Saruk, only to have the Imperials turn on them once the invaders were dispatched. The betrayal took a deadly toll on the Rogues, but Wedge managed to escape unharmed. The Rogues also turned away invasions by the Nagai and the Toss from outside the known universe. Over the next year, the Rogues flew many missions for the New Republic. One very important mission found them attempting to capture Grand Vizier Sate Pestage. They ultimately failed to do so, and following the mission, the Rogues were disbanded. Wedge used his legend status to help the New Republic with a public relations campaign, but despite his efforts, their growth was stalling. It became apparent that in order to reclaim the galaxy, they would need to drive the Empire from Coruscant. The Rogues were reformed, with Wedge as its leader, and new recruits, Corran Han, Oral Quirg, and Gavin Darklighter. In their initial missions, they destroyed an Imperial Lancer-class frigate, defended themselves against a stormtrooper attack on Talisa,
stormtroopers here,
leveled the base on Valdet, and attempted to retake the planet Borealis, which was a staging area for Coruscant. During the first raid to take the planet, the Rogues underestimated the strength of the Imperials and were pushed back, but with a retooled plan, Corran Horn, they were able to retake the planet. With Borealis back, the plan turned to retaking Coruscant. The New Republic agents took time observing the planet's infrastructure and formulated a strategy. While undercover on planet, Wedge met his future wife, Aiella Wasiri. The recapture of Coruscant changed the tide of the New Republic, and Wedge was dubbed the Conqueror of Coruscant. Immediately afterward, the Superstar Destroyer Lusankia blasted its way out of Coruscant to Thyfera, where Isani Isard took control. Wedge and the rest of the Rogues resigned their commissions to fight what became known as the Bacta War. Wedge, operating from the Yag Prime Station at Yugdul, led Rogue Squadron in a stunning campaign that resulted in the capture of an Imperial Star Destroyer and a Super Star Destroyer, the downfall of the Bacta Cartel, and the apparent end of Isani Isard, all while operating largely independent from the New Republic. Upon the successful resolution of the Bacta War, Wedge and the Rogues were informed that their resignations had been misplaced, and they were allowed to rejoin the New Republic. Soon after, Wedge formed a new starfighter covert operations unit named Rey Squadron. He led the unit on several missions, but eventually returned to Rogue Squadron to lead them in the Thrawn campaign. Wedge was instrumental in battles throughout Thrawn's Imperial resurgence, and often served as a backup for Han Solo,
I owe you one,
and an escort for Leia Organa Solo.
You're braver than I thought.
After helping to defeat Thrawn at the Battle of Bilbringi, Wedge was given the rank of general and took command of the Star Destroyer Emancipator. He eventually returned to his duties as pilot and led a resurrected Rogue Squadron to several pivotal victories. At the end of the Galactic Civil War, he retired and had two daughters with his wife, Aiella. When the extent of the Yuuzhan Vong threat became clear to the New Republic, Wedge was asked to re-enter active duty. He established the Black Moon Borealis as his base of operations, collecting scattered fleet elements that had retreated from Coruscant. He set up a delay tactic to allow time for an escape from the Yuuzhan Vong attack on Borealis, and in the heat of the battle that followed, managed to single-handedly escape in an abandoned X-Wing, destroy at least an entire squadron of Coral Skippers, and return to the fleet without even the aid of an astromech droid. He continued to fly missions throughout the war, and was instrumental in the liberation of Coruscant.
This is it, boys.
Wedge retired again after the end of the Yuuzhan Vong War, and did not participate in the Swarm War. When tensions escalated between the Galactic Alliance and his homeworld of Corellia, Wedge initially resolved to remain retired and not choose between the two. However, after Alliance agents came to his home and moved him to a holding cell on Coruscant, his decision became much easier. After escaping, he took up the position of general in the Corellian Defense Force. He continues to play a pivotal role in the events surrounding the Second Corellian Crisis. Aside from his appearances in all three original trilogy films, Wedge is featured heavily in the Rogue Squadron video games, the comic series X-Wing Rogue Squadron, the novel series X-Wing, the Thrawn Trilogy, Dark Empire 1 and 2, Crimson Empire, the Jedi Academy Trilogy, the Corellian Trilogy, the Hand of Thrawn Duology, the new Jedi Order series, the continuing Legacy of the Force series, as well as several other novels and comics. Check out the link in our show notes for a full list of his appearances.
That was an undertaking, wasn't it?
And I do have to apologize for any of you fans out there who know all of those pronunciations and know that I butchered them. There are several planets and names and things that I couldn't find pronunciations for, so I just winged it. So hopefully it wasn't too bad.
Well, I mean, that's what it's all about. I always go back to the Han Solo, Han Solo thing, right?
Right.
It's different. Hey, tomato, tomato. Well, that's your EU for this week. Let's check out the mail.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message after the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him.
It's a trick. Send no reply.
All right, and for our listener mail segment, we are honored to have our own Jovial Jay Shepherd joining us. This is like our first official guest co-host. What's going on, Jay?
Hey, man, not much. I mean, you don't need to be honored. I mean, you know, I'm just...
is humbled better? I think humbled is better.
Okay, you know, the more you put me up on a pedestal, you know, the more I'm going to have to smack you guys down when I actually meet you. So.
What do you mean? We've all met. Of course we have.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm looking at you through the windscreen right now.
I mean, don't you know we have state-of-the-art studios and a budget of millions?
Cut me a freaking bone here.
All right. So our first Star Wars tale is from Tom in Tokyo. He says, "Hey guys, I'm loving the show. I'm in that wonderful time when I've just discovered it and can listen to two or three a day." Can you imagine listening to us two or three times a day?
I have to listen to you all day.
Well, what I will do when I have to wait a week for each episode like everyone else, I just don't know. I have a Star Wars story for you. First of all, a question. Do you know anyone who doesn't know that Darth Vader is in fact Luke Skywalker's father? I think it would be very hard to find one in the Western world. I can't actually remember before I knew this fact. Even those who have never seen the films know this piece of Star Wars lore. I'm Australian, but have been living in Japan for the last 7 years, and here Star Wars is immensely popular, but is not part of the common consciousness like it is in the Western world. This means that there are millions of people here who don't know this little plot detail. When I started going out with my wife, my now wife, I found out that she had never seen the films, and with a little more subtle detective work, deduced that she didn't know that Darth Vader was Luke's father. She didn't know anything about Star Wars at all. ooh, I thought, here is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The opportunity to watch the trilogy with someone who had no idea about the huge reveal in Empire. A virgin, if you will. Haven't you always wished you could see, have seen other people's reactions back in 1980? Now this was my chance. So I set up a day to watch Episode 4 together. She was suitably thrilled. The next weekend we would be doing the big one, The Empire Strikes Back. What would happen? Would she hit the ceiling like audiences must have been back in the day? Would she think it was all just a ruse by Vader? Would she even care? The big scene rolled around. She was deeply into it, staring intently at the screen. I, however, was staring intently at her to see the reaction. Then he said it. I am your father. Her jaw dropped. She whipped around to face me. Is that true? She screamed. Uh-huh, I replied, nodding gleefully. It was all I could hope for. And more. When the movie finished, she peppered me with questions and was suitably wowed by the experience. I used to wonder if rose-tinted glasses made the Star Wars films better to us fans than they really were, but this experience showed me that they still have the power to move and thrill. It's not in our imaginations. Anyway, thanks for the show. You're right that Lucasfilm should really think about including Vader in the live TV series. Thanks, Tom in Tokyo. Well, thank you, Tom in Tokyo. Have either of you guys ever had the opportunity to watch Star Wars with someone who had never seen it before?
Only with children.
Yeah, I mean, my kids have finally seen Star Wars, but I mean, they've read through the books and then, you know, looked at all the pictures and they know what's going on, so.
So it's not really a big surprise. You haven't had one of those big moments.
No. No. Actually, Lego Star Wars spoiled it for them. They know more about the series from the films they even haven't seen. Like, I won't show them Revenge of the Sith yet, and they know all the reveals and everything from there, from the video game.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, what a completely different way to experience the storyline, you know, through those games. So, but anyway, we want to thank Tom for the email and an Australian living in Japan. It always amazes me the variety of folks that email us. It's very, very cool. Jay, you want to take the next one?
Yeah, so this one comes from Dex1138. It says, hey there, Forcecasters. I thought since everyone else was writing in with their Star Wars wedding tales that I'd drop a note too. So let me start by saying we met through a dating site, and one of the reasons I contacted her was that she had Star Wars listed in her profile. By our third date, I, quote, had a good feeling about this since she would throw out the occasional line of dialogue and conversation. A couple of weeks later was our first joint visit to Toys R Us, and she bought more than I did. It was peanut stuff, but hey, any girl that picks up more stuff at Toys R Us than I do has got to be all right. So almost 4 years to the day of our first date, and two prequels later, we tied the knot. We both also share a love of Peanuts, the comic strip, not the food, and decided to make out special favors for our guests. Every seat had a pair of Pez dispensers tied together with ribbon, one Peanuts, one Attack of the Clones, since we were wed in 2002. Our cake topper, which he includes a photo of, had Boba Fett and Snoopy in place of the traditional bride and groom, which my parents surprised us with. Woodstock and Salacious Crumb also tagged along. Our wedding soundtrack was a compilation of various movie TV themes. The bridal party entered the reception to Linus and Lucy, or the Peanuts theme, and we entered to the Yavin throne room music. When we got to the head table and turned to face the crowd, I did indeed feel like I had just blown up the Death Star and had gotten my medal. And in the crowd, I saw one of my high school pals doing his best Chewbacca roar in reaction to the music. We also used the Raiders March for the removing of the garter. I just wish I had the fedora to complete the scene. Here's wishing you many more podcasts.
Well, thank you, Dex. We appreciate that. I think Dex is on our forums quite a bit over at Rebel Scum. So now, Jay, you're a married guy, so
yeah.
Did you have any of these Star Wars elements in your wedding?
No. I got married in 94, kind of before the resurgence of Star Wars, and before I kind of knew that I wanted to really be including Star Wars that much. But for my first anniversary, my wife did buy me the action figures, the remaining orange carded figures that I didn't have.
Aww. That's cool.
And you know, and now it's, you know, millions of dollars later, and like, what the heck did I start?
All right, Pete, what do you got?
Well, this last Star Wars tale comes from Clint, and he went to Jeremy Bullock's appearance in Michigan. He says, I got there about 5 o'clock when they were still setting up, and I saw them putting up the fences, so I got first in line. My dad and my brother walked around, and I got to meet lots of other Star Wars fans who I could talk to, which was great. The 501st Legion started to come, and that was awesome. I saw officers, troopers, Jedi, TIE pilots, and engineers, and a guy in an authentic Boba Fett suit came by, walked right next to me, and nodded at me. By then, the line was huge, and since I was first, my little brother got in line with me. Then, finally, Jeremy came. He walked right next to me and started talking to my little brother. What a nice guy. Then he sat down in his desk, and then, since the autographing hadn't started yet, he talked to me for a little bit. I got an official pick autograph at half price for $20, too. It was awesome. And I just wanted to tell you what it was like to be in line first and tell you from that perspective what it was just like. It's still Saturday night, and I'm still shaking. Thanks. So, again, another cool Jeremy Bullock story. I don't think this guy is mean to anyone, and he really enjoys...
It's kind of ironic. He's like one of the nicest guys ever, and with fans and everything, and he played such a bad guy.
Oh, he was kind of mean to me at C3, though. I don't know. So. I got an elevator with him, and he was going up to like the 9th floor. Now, granted, there were some other Rebel Scum people in the elevator too, and he's going up the 9th floor, and I hit 7, and everybody else was going up to 9. And I was the only one getting off at 7. He was like, "That's very rude." And that was my introduction to Jeremy Bullock. But he was smiling the entire time.
So. Right. Well, that's cool. Well, we want to thank Clint for that email. And, we might as well just kind of get right down to why you're here, Jay, other than the fact that, you're a big part of our team, not just on the podcast, but at Force.net and RebelScum.com. There was a particular email that we got last week that they seemed like
that you read too.
That's right. We did.
You didn't just get it. You read it.
That's right. We read it. It was from John. And just go ahead, Jay. What do you have to say about it?
Well, basically, John was pointing out that in my, I guess it was the second segment of my Expanded Universe introduction that, Tatooine was, in fact, not Expanded Universe. It's part of G-level canon, and, I was incorrect, and, of course, you guys had fun pointing that. Now, let me just reiterate here. What I said was that Tatooine, and if you go back and listen to this, Tatooine was not mentioned in the film. Okay, that was my first statement, and then I think that was what I had wrote, and then my off-the-cuff remark after that was, it's EU. Okay, so what I was trying to get at was just that Tatooine was not mentioned in the film. Okay, so it's not technically wrong, because Tatooine was never mentioned in A New Hope. Okay, the error just came in referring that the planet Tatooine was named in an EU source, because technically, if I follow my list of Star Wars canon, Tatooine is, in fact, G-level canon, like John mentioned, because it was mentioned in the script and the novelization, and both of those publications are considered G-level canon. They come directly from George Lucas along with the film. So, was I confused? Yeah. But was I wrong? No.
Never.
Don't get technical with me.
Yes. And then we've got... we had someone else write in this week, and they mentioned that... Tatooine actually was first spoken in The Empire Strikes Back as well. So that would be the first place that anyone would have found out the name if they were just watching the film.
I was trying to remember, like, real quick, when was it mentioned? When was it mentioned? Yeah, at the very, very end, the rendezvous.
Yeah, the very end. And now, of course, if you don't know that Tatooine is the desert planet, Lando's just saying, hey, we're going to go to Tatooine, and until Return of the Jedi... If you're only paying attention to the films, you probably aren't going to put together that Tatooine is this desert planet. And then the first time that we know that Tatooine is Tatooine with the desert planet now we're getting into which order do you watch the films in.
Right,
Phantom Menace has them talking about going to Tatooine and then landing on the desert planet. So,
well, do you think, Jay, do you think it was intentional, or it was kind of a surprise when Jedi opened up that they were going back to Luke's home planet?
When I watched it, I don't know that. I guess I was surprised. I figured there would be jumping more. Like Lando said, he was going to meet them on Tatooine,
And then I figured they would, you know, just be doing something else. Mm. So, you know, the fact that you hadn't really been introduced to Jabba the Hutt yet, and you weren't sure how this whole thing with Boba Fett, you know, what was he doing with Han, you know, where were they going to meet, and stuff right. like that. And the trailers, you know, just showed you all sorts of crazy stuff. You couldn't put anything together at the time. I mean, at least not to a...
So maybe the connection wasn't made that this was the same planet that we saw Luke originate from.
I guess you could, I guess you could argue that. Well, probably up until the point where Han says, you know, all I see is a big bright blur, and, you know, Luke says something, what, you know, this is where I grew up, right? So, that point, I think it would cement it, but...
You're going to die here, you know.
Yeah.
one of my all-time favorite lines. Convenient. Anyway, all right, well, let's get on to some of our other mail. We've got one coming in from, oh my, this is a long one, Sean Heisey. And Sean is from, I see what this is, excuse me. Speaking of rebuttals, this is a rebuttal from a story that Pete and I talked about last week, where some folks in the UK had petitioned the United Nations to include the Jedi religion in some sort of day of acceptance of all world religions. And, you know, Jay, I don't know, you listened to the show. I mean, did it sound to you as though Pete and I were making fun of these folks? Because that really wasn't our intention.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it was, you guys kind of got into it briefly, and then, if I recall, that was the one where you said, you know, we don't really want to get into a whole religious, you know, discussion. And of course I kind of know your guys' style and stuff. So, I mean, I guess I could see that if someone just wasn't really paying attention or something like that, you might see that. But I mean, I didn't take any offense at that and think you guys were poking fun. So,
well, I actually, this fella, Sean, Heisey, he emailed me, he says, hello, after hearing your references to the two Jedi that petitioned the UN for the recognition of the Jedi religion, I thought I would provide you with a little information. After these two people petitioned the UN, a journalist named Sally Turner contacted the Temple of the Jedi Order to write an article responding to these petitioners. The Temple of the Jedi Order is a recognized church registered in the state of Texas and is invested with all the applicable rights of a church. And he adds the article in this email. And we're going to try to, I don't have the original link, I don't believe, and I don't really want to copy the text of the article. So I'm going to try to get Sean to provide me a link so we can get that on our show notes, because it's very, very interesting. Basically, what happened was this UK census incident that they call, where kind of a random group of folks were really pulling a, what they call in this article, an anti-establishment prank, where they were didn't have any, you know, significant religious ties, and they said, yeah, I'm a Jedi. And so it there were enough people that agreed to do this, and it sort of kind of snowballed from there. So I think what we're seeing is there is a faction of folks that are pretty serious, and Sean's one of them, pretty serious in calling the Jedi principles, their religion, their faith. And then there's these folks that kind of thought, oh, wouldn't this be fun? We got an email from a guy actually that said, yeah, I got this thing. And I thought, well, you know, I don't really feel one way or the other about religion. So I went ahead and did it. So I think we got to separate here the folks playing the prank. And then there's the folks that this is pretty real to them. What do you know about the temple, Jay? Have you ever been on their site?
No, I've never been to the temple site. I do read the Dark Horse message boards, and someone posted I assume a guy from the UK, he posted an article about this back in like mid-November, and it's got a picture of Chewbacca holding up a sign saying, it says, tolerance for Jedis, and then this guy with a beard and a, you know, in a Jedi robe, and a girl in a Jedi robe with her head kind of on his shoulder looking off into the sun, and I think it might be the story that you guys are referencing, because they cut and paste the article into the forum here about Star Wars fans wanting Jedi rights. Again, it's from the UK, but you know, I mean, someone heard about this at my office, and they're like, "Hey, are you gonna become a Jedi?" And I'm like, you know, that's going a little far for me. Mm-hmm. And I can see, you know, getting back to one of the points you made in the previous show, just kind of with the the public, a lot of people, you know, they can't differentiate between Star Trek and Star Wars.
Yeah, right.
I so many people come up to me and go, hey, did you go see the new Star Trek film? I'm like, no, but that Picard is pretty cute. And, you know, so, you know, you get all the, you know, the geek references and people, you know, going, beam me up, Scotty, and stuff. And they don't understand, you know, I mean, even from a broad perspective. So then they start seeing stuff like this. Oh, you know, you're into Star Wars. So, okay, so you're fighting for your religious freedoms. And, you know, I'm all for letting people believe what they want. I would not choose to label myself that way, but. That's, you know, yeah. Again, that's not for me to say. And if anybody wants to do that, it's, you know, it's like any of the other legislation we're trying to pass on, you know, marriage or religion and stuff here in the States. So,
yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of nice. We do live in a country where we can say we're anything we want in terms of religion. So,
darn right.
Yeah, absolutely. Red, white, and blue. So,
all right, simmer down.
All right. So we did get we got another email. This is from Kevin in Superior, Wisconsin, and he says, hey, if this becomes an official religion, does buying Star Wars toys become tax deductible?
Can I claim back taxes on that?
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely.
I saved my receipts.
Well, you know, Kevin's email speaks for itself. It's Anyway, hey, Jay, you want to take the next one?
Sure. Okay, this one comes to us from Mike, and it says, hey, guys, long-time listener, first-time emailer. I was catching up on the listener mail segment of the show on my way into work this morning, and I thought I might be able to help answer the question of why we probably won't be getting two-disc editions of the scores to episodes 2 and 3. So I guess this is in response to the question we had last week about the deluxe version of episode 1's score. It's at least in part because a pretty considerable amount of the music in these two movies was edited in from the scores to the ones that came before them. Of the edits that I noticed, the ones that stick out in my mind are in Revenge of the Sith, since I've seen it more recently than Attack of the Clones. I'm pretty sure that the cue from Yoda's arrival on Kashyyyk is taken from Love Pledge and the Arena at 3:20 into the track, if I remember the scene correctly, from the Episode 2 soundtrack, and both the Battle of the Heroes and Duel of the Fates suites are used during the scenes of the final Yoda Sidious and Anakin Obi-Wan duels. I know there are more, but without taking the time to watch the movie specifically to find them, that's all I've got. Anyway, I hope that helps explain it. The podcast is great. Keep it up. So that's interesting. This would be the first time that I've heard anyone talk about the potential that Williams was actually recycling music from a previous score into Revenge of the Sith.
Well, and that being a reason why we wouldn't see double disc versions. I mean, you could say he's done that before. I mean, the Imperial March shows up in several of the films. So I don't, I mean, this is an interesting take. I think what he's kind of saying is all the music, if you were to take the time, all the music is released.
Yeah. I mean, and that's possible, I guess. I mean, Williams has been, I mean, even with the first trilogy, thematically, the music gets recycled, even though, you know, it's re-recorded for the film.
Right.
But just to, you know, I don't know, and I'm not as familiar with the prequel scores as I am with the original trilogy scores, but just to have, you know, I mean, Mike makes it sound like, you know, Williams is just kind of, you know, cutting and pasting, but, I mean, you know, he's getting old, maybe he's getting tired, I don't know.
Well, when you've done as much as he has, you know,
right.
Sometimes that happens. But we also got an answer to another question that was posed in that same email. And this comes from Hank in Venice, Florida. And Hank was responding to the question of the episode 6 soundtrack, where there's a musical cue obstinately played by the Max Rebo band that appeared both in the original and special edition versions of Return of the Jedi, but did not appear on either the 1993 box set or the 1997 double CD soundtrack. Song also appeared in the 1983 From Star Wars to Jedi TV special, and as far as I know, he says, it is the only piece of music from episodes 1 4, 5, and 6 not to be yet released, as the running times of the discs in the double Return of the Jedi set are 73 minutes and 16 seconds and 74 minutes and 47 seconds, it would seem that the song was not left off because of lack of CD space. Anyway, I've been curious about that for years, and I wanted to just keep the question out there for Lucasfilm to hopefully answer. So, not really an answer, but kind of gives you a thought that that's still out there, that we want to find that out. And we haven't heard the answer fully as of yet. So.
No, now I'm curious, because I know exactly what he's talking about.
Right, and it was posed last week, but we kind of glossed over it a little bit, and
yeah.
He just wanted to make sure that we kept on it to make sure that we do find out what the actual answer is. So
there might be somebody we could float that that question by, hopefully.
Okay, so I mean, this was the second queue on the sail barge, right, where the skiffs are coming up with the prisoners and everything,
right?
And the band is playing something on the sail barge.
Yep, and right, and you, that's when you're introduced. That's when 3PO runs into R2.
Okay, right.
Yeah,
that's where I thought that was on the box set. That's where I'll have to pull out my box set and listen. But okay, wild.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I love about these emails is, you know, so many different takes on this stuff. So that's pretty much it for our listener mail segment. Jay, we want to thank you for being here. That was pretty awesome.
Oh, thanks for the invite, guys. Yeah, anytime I can come in and, you know, clear my geek cred with you guys is it's time well spent.
All right, well, we're going to close the show here in just a second. But again, we want to thank Jay Shepard and... we're going to just take a brief pause here, and we'll be back in just a moment.
We were nerds, dorks, geeks. We were shunned, ridiculed, and downtrodden. But we saw the world through a different set of eyes than others did. We were the ones who escaped to our imaginations to make sense of the world around us. We have ever been the dreamers, creators, and seekers of myth. For it is here we look for understanding in our world. Somehow, no matter how bad things got, we were always looking up. Join me, Indiana Jim, for discussion of the latest headlines and hottest topics in the realm of geekdom. From science fiction and fantasy, to movies and the music that makes them great, to writing, philosophy, inspiration from history, and the newest geek gadgets. Visit thingsarelookingup.wordpress.com and explore with me the things that have us looking up to the horizon, the heavens, and beyond.
Well, that's going to do it for us this week. We want to thank you for joining us. We'd also like to thank our good buddy Jay Shepard for joining us as well. Hoping to have Jay back sometime soon. Well, he will be back next week with another intro to the EU. We also want to thank our sponsor for this week, Official Picks. Make sure you check them out for all of your Star Wars autograph and photo needs. They make a great gift for that Star Wars fan who thinks he has everything.
And make sure you turn in next week when Jason will be on the hot seat and I will be interviewing him in the cantina.
We also want to remind you once again about the Rebel Scum 10th Anniversary Contest. Make sure you get your entry in. I mean, talk about a once-in-a-lifetime prize. Get your own custom 12-inch figure made. Also, the Imperial Shuttle Contest at RebelScum.com. Take a look at that as well.
And as always, we love hearing from our listeners, and we want to make sure that that keeps coming. You can email us at podcast@theforce.net. You can Skype us at username ForceCast or 330-871-4TFN. And keep an eye on our official forums at rebelscum.com.
And I just want to say that for those of you who have tried to call us before on the Skype line, we've got it fixed. You don't have to wait 15 minutes for the machine to pick up. So if you've tried and given up, try again, because I think we've got it licked this time. That's going to do it for us. We've got a new piece of music for you all. This from listener Bruce Murray. It's that time of year, and Bruce is talking about walkers in a winter wonderland. See you next time, folks. For the ForceCast, I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
And remember,
the Force will be with you. Always.
Echo Base. Are you listening? I see white armor glistening, and sir, I think we should go. I see through the snow walkers in a winter wonderland. All I have to defend us are a handful of extras. I guess we'll give it a shot. I think we'll do squat to walkers in a winter wonderland. Here I am, a hapless rebel soldier, stuck here on a planet like a fridge. Don't think I'll be getting too much older. Look what I see on the southern ridge. They're so big, they'll get past us. Armor's too strong for blasters. You know the zip we can do with gum on the shoe of walkers in a winter wonderland. We're all beaten, so retreat on calling. We're slaughtered by machines of giant size. Here and there the snow is gently falling, and so are all the speeder pilot guys. But they walk on for Lord Vader to the shield generator. All our defenses are flop, cause nothing can stop walkers in a winter wonderland. Yes, our defenses are flop, cause nothing can stop walkers in a winter wonderland.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.